all those that celebrate the glorious return of baseball. I do love that I'm so excited for something that's probably going to bring me just so much frustration. The baseball sweats. I don't care how long I watch this sport. I don't think I'll ever actually be able to manage a 162 game schedule in the sense of really understanding what one game means. Like always blowing out the import of one game. It's just impossible. It's just impossible for me not to. And the home opener specifically, or the opening day game specifically, I'm always reading way too much into this. And I'm going to do it again. And I'm probably going to do it for the rest of my life. And honestly, if I ever stop caring or loving opening day, if it becomes like, oh, yeah, okay, that's this week, I gotta throw my cleats over the phone line. It's time to hang them up because I love this. I love opening day. Oh, God, do I love the home opener. Opening day is great, but home opener opening day? Oh, like, can you hear the joy in my voice? Knowing that I get to go down to the Rogers Center today, hang out with some friends, crack a few BLs, watch the Toronto Blue Jays, probably ground out a ton. Who cares? What a day. What a fantastic day. Perfect. Every single day is a good day to go down to the ballpark. That's the beauty of baseball. There is no day where I don't want to go down there and be at that stadium. Like, it is extremely rare. Even 2017, 2018, some of those horrific teams that was basically, hey, they go down 1-0 and it's over. You can watch empty Brandon Drury at bats. That even those years, still loved going. And this season is very, very strange, right? Like, there's a ton of questions that are going to happen. And I will start by saying this. The Vladdy reports that are out there right now, they're making me a little too optimistic. I got to tell you, because there is a scenario in my mind that they get this thing done today and it creates just pandemonium amongst the fan base. Like, there is a real added incentive for both the Blue Jays and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to get this thing done today. Not that you don't already have a ton of excitement just for the season opener, which, again, I get it if you're just like a pessimistic Blue Jays fan who's been beaten down by these last bunch of years. That's just not how I feel on this day. I think you're going to have 162 days where they can frustrate you, they can piss you off, or you can learn a lot about the team. But to me, like, home opener is just... It's usually just about unbridled enthusiasm. Like, even if you're a realist, whatever. You get so few days where you get to, like, really hope on a team and really dream on a team's possibilities. Why not just do that? Like, again, I feel like I'm kind of a pessimistic person in general. I think that I usually try to look at things, like, through a very realistic realistic viewpoint. I just hate doing that today. Today is just a celebration. But this Vladdy thing, these reports that keep coming out about, like, these teases. And again, they're usually from insiders that I don't know. It's a lot of guys from the Dominican Republic, which is always like, wait, is this Vladdy leaking this? Because what's he doing here? Is it his camp is giving people this? Does he just have too many leaks? Does he have too many people where it's like they don't really have their finger on the pulse of this thing and they're kind of more hopeful that Vladdy's going to sign here? Like, I don't know how to read some of this stuff, but I will just tell you that if they were to announce a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. contract extension today, the reception that he would be getting at this home opener and the vibe of that place would alter so drastically today that it's worth it. It's worth it for them. For Vladdy, it's like, man, shave a little money off the top and Blue Jays, come meet the price a little closer. Could you imagine when they're doing the announcements for Vladdy today, if they're saying, and now Toronto Blue Jay for the next 14 seasons, like, God, it's just, it for it to be this close and for these reports to keep coming out, they're tantalizing. They're exciting. I'll tell you right now, I'm not expecting it because, again, until I start to see Passan or Shy, somebody just like really comes out with like strong reporting that this is happening today. But it's just, I don't believe in the deadline. I never believed in the deadline. I actually think that the Blue Jays are going to continue to try to work towards getting this guy done over, the course of the entire season, essentially, unless things go real, real sour. But I would just love to have that excitement in the building today, even though I'm already extremely excited. And yeah, like I said, I know playoffs hit different, but they're not guaranteed. The home opener is guaranteed. And that's why it's my favorite day of the year, is you can dream on this baseball team. You can look at it through the view of what are the things that could happen. Well, if they were to succeed, what does it look like? And put it together that way. So again, you got an entire year where you can crap on the team if they suck. You've got so much time to be pessimistic about this. But today is about renewed optimism, and I really think this fan base needs it. And so that's the way that I'm going to be looking at it today. Dan Shulman, what better way to start? The voice of the Blue Jays. Thanks for doing this, man.
JD, how are you? You're fired up, I can tell.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I love this day so much. I get to just go to the ballpark and enjoy Bud Lights and cruising around and meeting friends and watching the game and then treating it as though it actually like really matters if they lose or if they win. I'm like, wow, I think this team has it. I'm like a big first impressions guy too when it comes to the new guys, the new players that are going to be out there. I'm basically going to judge Roden's entire career based on his like four at-bats that he's going to get today. What's your favorite part of opening day? Because I know you're sentimental about the game as well.
I just love, it's just kind of big picture being in the ballpark and the games matter again. And I think the optimism, and I don't care if you're a Blue Jay fan or a Brewer fan or just a baseball fan, it's a very, very fun day. It's optimism about baseball up in our neck of the woods. It's the weather hopefully starting to get better at some point soon. You know, we can dream on the roof being open in a few weeks if all things go well. But, listen, this is what I've done for a living for over 30 years, right? So this is always a very special day for me, whether it was going to the first game back in 1977 or all the games I've been able to do over the years. I just love being in the ballpark and the optimism that exists. And I understand that there's a significant portion of the fan base that may not be optimistic, and I totally get that. Like, they're going to have to play well and have some really good outcomes for them to contend for a playoff spot. But I think you said it well. You can dream on this team. You look at this team. They're unquestionably better than they were at the end of last year. I don't know how anybody would argue that. And I think they're better than they were at the beginning of last year. And then just as importantly, and you hate to see injuries, but like the Yankees and Orioles are going through some stuff right now. So I think that's brought them back to the pack a little bit. And I'm not a huge projections guy, but if you go on any source and look at projections, like every single one has the whole division between like 82 and 88 wins or something like that. It's going to be, I think, intense and fun right from the beginning. And I will say the Blue Jays kind of got the short straw at the beginning of the year in the schedule. Like, their schedule is tough early. That obviously means it gets easier late, but they've got to keep their heads above water for the first 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'm already doing the thing because of the Orioles injuries where I go, like, they got to win 3 or 4. this is very pressing that they don't just come out of this with a split. This is a statement series for them. Let me see Santander against his former team actually just slug them, make them feel like what they were missing. Again, I always put way too much stock into this. I said it off the top. I'll never be someone who can properly manage 162 games. I just treat them all like they're of great import, and then I get the perspective later when I.
Let me ask you this: Do you remember what happened on opening day last year?
Opening was opening day last year. Rays.
Yes, down there. Yeah, win. Do you remember what happened?
Yeah, win.
Hit three home runs and won.
Yeah, yeah. And, it was. So, hey, they've got power. Don't worry, this team's power is here.
Yeah.
It was great.
2 years ago. Is it 2 years ago? When was the first year? Oh, the home opener 2 years ago, the first year after or was it last year? They hit in the home opener either last year or the year before. They hit five home runs. Remember, it was the first day of the renovation of the outfield. So it was last year, the first day of the second stage. They hit five home runs. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One day is one day. But you know what? Let's make this one day into as big a thing as we want to. It's allowed to be a national holiday for us baseball nuts.
100%. And I just think, like, yeah, I usually remember the home openers more than the opening days because I go to the home openers. You just, what you said, you were there like for the first one. That made me feel like a child because I always really pride myself on the fact that I've been to every single one since 2013. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I feel like I got real pedigree with the home opener. And you just completely robbed that of me at the very beginning of this segment. But no, it's okay. But you know what? They've actually, I think they've won five straight season opening games. I'm pretty sure that's the right stat. So yeah, they're always the get off hot team. And I want the streak to continue. The only streak I don't want to continue today is the Tyler O'Neill one. Because he actually has one of his home runs against the Blue Jays. Everyone's aware of it. I think he has, is it five straight that he's sitting on or is he looking for five straight?
He's sitting on five. He has homered in five consecutive opening days, which I think is an all-time major league record. So, and obviously he's Canadian. He'll have some family there today. So, but from a Blue Jay perspective, you want that streak to end.
I'd walk him every time. I'd just spoil it.
Just analytics right there, folks.
Just spoil it for him and just be like, yeah, not on our watch. This isn't happening. Okay, so you mentioned the division, and I think that this is one of the most compelling things for me is there was a moment there, like Soto left, and you went, oh, what's going to happen to the Yankees? And then they had a bunch of exciting signings. But ultimately, man, Soto is just such a force multiplier. And to lose Gerrit Cole, like you just think about any roster removing those two guys, and it's much, much harder to envision how they're going to be the same New York Yankees. The Red Sox, solid offseason, Crochet and Bregman, but still not a team that I look at and say, like, oh my God, there's absolutely just no shot. I thought the Orioles kind of bungled their offseason, if I'm being quite honest. I think that the bats they got were of quality, but for a team that was so desperate for starting pitching even last year, I'm not blown away by them. The Rays are always sneaky. They're always good. But ultimately, this has been one of the things to me is like, that's part of why you can dream on this is that the division is not as scary as the AL East usually is. I'm sure one of these teams will emerge and run away with it. I don't think the Blue Jays are favored to do so. But are you buying into this theory about the division as much as other people seem to be?
Yeah, I think it is going to be tightly bunched. Like, I think there are a lot of really good teams in the division, or a lot of good teams in the division, and a lot of good teams in the American League. Like, who are the bad teams in the American League? The White Sox, probably the Angels, and everybody will say the A's, but slow down here. You know, they were really good the last 2 months, and they might be competitive, but could Kansas City, Detroit, Minnesota, or Cleveland, any of those teams win the Central and be good? Yes. Could Texas, Houston, Seattle, any of those teams be good and win the West? Yes. There are a lot of good teams in the league, but I don't know that there are great teams in the American League. Like, it all starts with the Dodgers. And then if you look at the Braves, the Phillies, like the superpowers might be in the National League this year. So, but the American League has obviously no weak teams at all. It rarely does. And certainly this year it doesn't. But the Yankees, I thought they did as well as a team could do after the Soto thing to kind of put their team back together. But you lose Cole for the year. You lose Luis Gil, who won Rookie of the Year last year, for at least 3 months. And who knows about Giancarlo Stanton, if he's ever going to play again. Like, at this point, we just don't know. Those are big losses. And you look at that lineup, and to me, it's kind of like the Blue Jay lineup. Like, you know, they've got Judge. The Blue Jays have Guerrero. And granted, you know, Judge is probably, you know, overall has been a better hitter than Vladdy. But they've each got their superstars, and they've each got two or three really nice complementary pieces. But and maybe more than that, I don't want to call Bobichet a complimentary piece, two or three other really good hitters around him. But after that, it's, well, how's this guy going to hit? How's this guy going to hit? I look at the Yankee lineup and the Blue Jay lineup as kind of being similar, to be honest with you. Baltimore has a great lineup, I think. They're the best offense in the division. I think they're probably the best offense in the league. But do they have the starting pitching to do it? And they've lost Grayson Rodriguez. It doesn't sound like it's for a long time, maybe a few weeks, maybe a little bit more than that. But he was supposed to be their number one. They've kind of got, like, you know, three number threes and a couple of number fours in their rotation right now. They're all capable. And it might be enough to, you know, for them to win 94 games and get into the playoffs. But then you wonder about the playoffs. The Rays have great depth in pitching, but they've lost Shane McClanahan for a while, and they dodged a bullet. It won't be that long, but that's a big loss for them at the front of their rotation. I wonder about their offense as well. I think Boston's pretty good. I got to be honest with you. I think the pickup Crochet and Bregman were great pickups. They've got some pitching injuries now too. Their farm system is ready to contribute. But I am totally bought in on 1 through 5 could be separated by like 7 or 8 games in this division, like 82 to 90. I'm totally bought in on that. It's really hard to do that in baseball because you still play your own division more than you play the others. It's not as extreme, but you know, people say it's a balanced schedule. It's not a balanced schedule. You still play your own division significantly more than you play everybody else. But if you told me the division was going to be 89, 87, 86, 84, 81, I would buy it. The tricky part is who's 1 and who's 5. And the Blue Jays can be in this. They've got to have some, you know, we can get into specifics. I know you'll want to. They've got to have some good outcomes from some very important players this year. They can't withstand a lot of injuries, and they can't have guys being the worst version of themselves. They've got to have some good outcomes from a lot of their guys here. But if things go their way, they can be in the hunt.
Yeah. To me, like I usually break it down as a pretty simplistic way. Like, do you have 2 of 3 things, like great defense, great pitching, great offense? Like, can you get 2 of those 3? Because I think you need 2 of the 3 in order to be like a real contender or like a postseason team. And then, yeah, can you have stories that emerge with your group that were well above what the expectation is, right? Like, I think that you put down the 3 guys at the top of the order as pretty much in pen, or you kind of need them to be at least, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially for this offense. But to me, like, I think the biggest story with the offense is who's the 4th bat, right? Because I think today it could be Jimenez who hits 4th. And this is a guy who they, like, Cleveland moved off of because they thought, hey, if he has another offensive season like he just did, we might not be able to trade him for the money. So you go, well, that's not great, you know, to be in your 4 hole. That's actually quite worse than even when they tried to put Varsho in cleanup a couple of years ago against St. Louis and thought maybe his bat was going to be something different than it was. So when you look at this team, is there an offensive guy outside the top 3 you're personally buying the most stock into as, well, I think this guy actually turns out to be their 4th most important bat?
So 4th most important bat might not hit 4th, as you say.
That's not the qualifier.
Right. I'm not convinced it'll be Bichette, Guerrero, Santander, 1-2-3 all season long. I get why it is now, but if they don't have the right guy to hit 4th, it wouldn't shock me if Guerrero and Santander went 3-4. Like, if somebody, and it could be Will Wagner, it could be Alan Rodon, it could be Andrés Giménez. Maybe they just decide they look at it differently. You know, if somebody else is going to go up to lead off or hit 2, you know, maybe that lengthens the lineup a little bit. But I've got a few guys. So obviously Bichette's got to have like a Bo Bichette kind of year, and I think everybody believes he will. And as you said, you almost have to put the top 3 down in pen, because if that doesn't happen, then it's just not going to happen.
You're dead.
Right? So and quickly on Jimenez hitting 4th, again, all of this stuff is subject to change. But to me, it's a little bit of a process by elimination. Like, they want Jimenez in front of Kirk, because if Jimenez is behind Kirk, Jimenez can't run nearly as much. So So then Kirk can't hit 4 unless you're going to hit Jimenez way further down in the lineup, which is a possibility. They don't want to hit Will Wagner 4, right? They don't want to hit George Springer 4. They don't want to put Alan Rodon 4 if he plays today in his first major league game. They don't want to hit Ernie Clement 4. Like, there's just, you know, there's only so many guys out there. So I think Jimenez is, he's an everyday guy. He's a contact hitter. And he's not going to be intimidated or, you know, awed by hitting 4th. Some of the other guys, although they're the same age as him, are raw rookies or in their second year in baseball. So I get the Jimenez thing, at least for now. Who's got to step up? Well, Jimenez is one of them. And I'm not saying 2022, because who knows if that's realistic. You know, the spring numbers were really good, but who knows? There was some power in the bat, too. 2 doubles, 2 triples, 2 homers in the spring. The new hitting coaches love what they've seen, and the hitters seem to love the new hitting coaches. So I'd put Jimenez in there. Alejandro Kirk can be a big swing guy to me for this team. You know, second half of the last 2 months of last year and this spring this year, Alejandro Kirk, a very productive offensive player. Again, can he get back to Silver Slugger 2022 on Alejandro Kirk? Who knows? But just be, you know, even if he splits the difference between that and some of the slumps he's had the downtimes he's had the last couple of years, that really helps. And then I think you need one other, and it could be Wagner, it could be Rodon, maybe it's both. Maybe Barger comes up in 2 weeks and it's him. You need 1 or 2 of those where some of these, younger guys who all have potential, and we've seen it from all of them in spurts. Can they be average to above average offensive players? And I think there's a chance. I think these guys are going to be put in a good position too. Like, they're all left-handed batters, right? So Davis Schneider's platooning with somebody, pinch hitting for somebody. Maybe Wagner and Clement end up in a platoon. I think you're going to see a different lineup every day. Like, today could be Wagner Roden day, and tomorrow could be Clement Lucas day, like putting these guys in situations to succeed. But I think that kind of bottom part of the order, the Wagner, and they might move around, but the Wagner Roden, maybe eventually Barger, he'll come back at some point. Guys like that, one or two of those guys, I think, need to pop for this team to have a good offense.
Yeah, I really like that answer, because I think that the way I framed it was Lourdes Gurriel, every year, he would have the 1 month where he was the best hitter in baseball, right? Like, you'd watch him for the first 3 months, and it was like, man, this guy, come on, can you get going? And then all of a sudden, it's just like, you can't get him out. He's hitting bombs everywhere, and he's just actually, like, carrying the offense. And I don't think that you've got a guy that necessarily is going to have that kind of, like, power. But can you get a team full of Lourdes Gurriels where it's one guy that gets hot for a month at a time, right? Like, can you have a month where Alan Roden is just an absolute stud? Can you have a month where Will Wagner is a stud? Can you have a month where Alejandro Kirk gets hot behind those three guys? I kind of feel like that's the formula for this offense, is the three guys and then somebody who's hot, and then the rest of the lineup not to just kill you. You know, you can't have them be automatic outs. You've got to have good plate appearances, going to have to draw a lot of walks. You're not going to be a huge power team, I don't think. So unfortunately, it's going to have to be like a lot of nickel and diming, a lot of creativity. But ultimately, like, I can at least see that, you know, like the answer that you just gave, I can see that outcome. And again, it's opening day, so I see that outcome now more than I might like in 2 months, where I'm like, I can't believe I was believing that it was going to be Addison Barger. But I'm with you on this. Like, that is, to me, at least a very realistic outcome, or a possible outcome when it comes to this group. I want to ask you this one. It's a little bit more like, not an exact thing, but do you think there is a story that we are overlooking?
Wow. About this team going into the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that you feel like you think about more than maybe the consensus does. It doesn't have to be like, you know, an earth-shattering thing, but something that maybe is a little bit underrated in terms of the overall discussion when it comes to this group.
I think it would be, and we've kind of nudged up against this, but it would be, you know, if they're not going to have a lot of power, how do you score in other ways? And I think especially with like the 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters, whoever they are, there's more than just what's your batting average, what's your slugging. They've got to execute. Like, they're, and I know we don't live in a small ball offensive world anymore. I totally get that. But there will be times where the bottom of the order, I think, is going to be asked to play for one run. You know, you get the right guy on, you know, get him on, get him over, get him in, whatever that means. Is it a steal? Is it a hit and run? It's not going to be a lot of bunting, but I think you'll see a little bit of that. And I'm not advocating to go back to the 1980s, you know, but sure. I think there are times against certain pitchers with certain hitters who are lined up one, two, you know, one after another towards the bottom of the lineup. It's getting the guy in. They were not good getting guys in from third with less than two outs last year. And three-run homers win games, but but a run here, a run there, chip away. Now you can line up your pitching a little bit differently. Now everybody's feeling a little bit less pressure. I think this team has to do things very well around the margins to win. Like, the big three got to be the big three. But as you said, and you talked about the other guys getting hot and just not killing you in that, I think the small stuff is going to matter a little bit more for this team than maybe we realize, because even if they're a better offensive team, we're not looking at the Bronx Bombers here, right? So I think, you know, Wagner putting the ball in play, Clement putting the ball in play, maybe it's Jimenez, depending on where he hits, moving a runner, Roden taking a walk in a key spot, Nathan Lucas hitting a fly ball and getting a guy in from third, you know, like professional, meaningful at-bats to get you the extra run here and there, I think is going to be very important for this team.
This can be a bullpen or a starting pitching answer. Which arm are you most curious about this season?
Good question. So Scherzer's the easy answer, right? Because he's new Scherzer. Yeah. Like if this were Family Feud, and that would be the number one answer, and I think it would be like 89. You know. So he's a future Hall of Famer. He's Max Scherzer. He's a huge personality. And for people who didn't watch, he didn't look good in the spring. He looked great in the spring. Like, objectively, even if you're a hater, he looked great in the spring. But the thumb is a thing, and we'll find out more on Saturday. So that's the easy answer. I think number two for me is Kevin Gausman, to be honest with you. And Gausman looked good in the spring, certainly better than last year. He's tinkering again. He's got a harder slider that he's going to throw a little bit more. And but when he really needs it, can he get 96 at the top of the zone and then a chase on a splitter to get a strikeout with a man on third base, that sort of thing? You know, like the first 2 years of Gausman was absolute dominance 90% of the time. He's 34. And you know, can he be dominant 90% of the time? That might not be a fair ask of him. But can Kevin Gausman legitimately be the ace or co-ace of this staff and have he had to grind a lot last year. And he was behind physically after the spring because of the shoulder, and it took him a long time to catch up, and the velocity kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit. Will he have more consistent velocity? Can he reach back for that big strikeout when he needs it? You know, we've seen him at his best, and his best is, you know, Cy Young caliber good. But if he can just, again, maybe it's even splitting the difference between last year and the year before, that's a really, really good starting pitcher. So he's a guy that I think I'm going to be watching with a lot of interest this year.
Yeah, I think those are great answers. For me, Scherzer is so fascinating just because he's someone that gets you excited to go to the ballpark. Like, just the opportunity to see him in a Blue Jays uniform is so exciting to me. But then if he can actually pitch and deliver and give you like a gutsy season where, I don't know what we put the over under on innings or starts, but if he can give you a compelling season, he's just such an X factor for this team in terms of like what they are. And you compound that with the depth behind Scherzer and what question marks arise if all of a sudden he can't pitch, or he does need a lengthy IL stint, or even just like what your belief would be if he does need one, that he's going to be able to come back at his age, right? He's to me like it's like I kind of hate using like the X factor things, but with the staff, he definitely is. And with Gausman,
he's the guy. Yeah, like, he's the guy for sure.
Yeah, we just have so much data now to suggest, like, hey, when the heater is hot, then he's going to get guys out at a ridiculous rate. They need punch-outs. They need Kevin Gausman in this starting rotation to kind of be the guy. And he came into last year hurt. He never really found it. I think the way you described it, ebbs and flows, is the perfect way to do it, where he'd give you these little glimmers where you'd be like, okay, Kevin Gausman's back. And then it was like, oh, no, he's not. He's not back at all. It's maybe he's done. And so for me, in terms of like the upside guy who can emerge as the ace, I think, again, Berríos is someone very much in the vein of Bo Bichette, where my expectation is if he plays a full healthy season, you know what the numbers are. You know, like you're going to get something pretty consistent year over year. With Kevin Gausman, that's the one where you can dream on and say, hey, maybe you've got an ace again. And if you get that, again, he's just such a multiplier when it comes to what you can think about with this season. Last one. I think I was pretty responsible in terms of I didn't make this segment all about it. I know what today is, but also when I do finish at the ballpark, you better believe where I'm going next is a sports bar, and I'm going to sit down from 7 o'clock to about, I would say, 1 a.m, and I will be watching March Madness. And I need to just ask you this one March Madness question. Sure. Who is the guy remaining? Like, I guess it's just going to be Cooper Flagg, but it can be Cooper Flagg. I don't care. That you're just like, you love to watch and you just can't wait to watch down the stretch here now as we hit the Sweet 16.
So I love Cooper Flagg, and I've said this to people all season long. If you don't like Cooper Flagg, it's because you don't like Duke. You may, and I don't mean you may not realize that.
Yeah, but he makes Duke likable.
Yeah. Like I had a guy in a plane like in December say, can I ask you something? And he knew I was, and I said, sure. He goes, do you think Cooper Flagg's overrated? And I said, can I ask you something? And he said, sure. And I said, do you hate Duke? And he goes, yeah, I hate Duke. And I said, like, that's very obvious. Like, Cooper Flagg is great. And whatever NBA team he winds up on, he winds up. The kid's 18 years old, and he plays the game the right way. Good teammate, coachable, you know, impacts winning in a million different ways. He's special. I love watching the Florida Gators play. Love. Saw them a lot during the season. Their backcourt is spectacular. Walter Clayton Jr. is one of the 5, 6, 7 best players in America, and a guy who transferred up from a mid-major, I think Iona, and the last couple of years he's been just unbelievable. Their big guys are great. Remember the names of their big guys? None of them will be a first round pick, I don't think, but like three of them are going to play in the NBA. They're all really, really good. So Duke and Florida are two teams that I really enjoy watching. I had a lot of Auburn during the year too, and they're great. They can be a bit of a soap opera. They get a lot of personalities, and they're not playing their best right now, but their best is as good as anybody's. But if I had to pick two teams, and I don't even know if they're playing tonight or tomorrow night, my experience would be like yours. You're going to a sports bar from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m. I'll get home at 7 p.m. and at about 8 o'clock, I'll turn on the TV. And then at 12:30, I'll wake up and go, when did I fall asleep? What happened here? I'll just say, because this is what happens at my age. So, but
listen, you're welcome to join me. I'll be there. I'll be sitting there with Ennis watching games. You feel right. The need. Like, we won't be far. We'll be within walking distance. I promise I'll be responsible. I won't That's make funny. You try to stay late. When you feel tired, I'll be like, hey, Dan, thanks for coming. But the invite is there. The invite is there.
All right. I appreciate that.
The only thing is I'm going to make you call some of the plays.
No. The fun thing is there are so many great teams remaining, and there have been some great games already. But there are going to be so many good games going forward. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great tournament. Yeah. One other team that I really like, and they're not flashy or sexy or anything like that, but I said this last night, I was on with Ailish and Justin, like the 10 toughest guys I've ever seen all play for the Houston Cougars right now. They're just, they're unbelievable. It's they're not much older than anybody else, but it's like they're the men's league. Like you're the hotshot teenagers. Let's go out to the, you know, to the Y and play a game. And the old guys are there. And then the old guys, you know, beat the hell out of you. Like that's what they are. They're just so tough and so together, and they're not going to win 86-84. They're going to win 66-64, but they're so, so good. And I really admire, you know, them as a team and that program as a whole.
Yeah, I don't care about the lack of Cinderella stories. I love having as many good teams as possible and having a Sweet 16 like this. And I can't wait. It's going to be phenomenal. The teams are great. There's a lot of NBA prospects that are in them. There's a lot of great coaches, like even Calipari is there with like a different team. I think it's a super compelling Sweet 16. And I can't wait. And I hope that you manage to stay awake for like just a little bit extra longer, you know, like I hope that you can, that the games are good enough tonight that you're like, you know what? Don't fall asleep, Dan, just fight it. And watch
my goal is the end of the early game. So that's like 9:45, which I'm not proud to say, but on a nothing doing night,
it's a long day.
Kind of lights out for this guy these days. So, you know,
it's a long day and people don't know how much energy it takes out of you to do a broadcast. Hey, Dan, I really do appreciate you coming on today. Thanks so much for making time.
Enjoy the day and the night.
Yeah, you too, man. Dan Shulman, the voice of the Blue Jays. Okay, so a couple quick things off that. I really do. I think that this season is just going to come down to, like, pretty simply put, that is, can you get normal seasons out of the guys that have the biggest shot, that are the most likely to give you their normal seasons? That is, with your offense, Vladdy, Santander, and Bo, right? That's the top of the pile. Those three guys, they got to give you what the expectation is. And if one of them is like well below or has a big injury, it kind of tanks your season. There's not a ton of margin for error with this group. Like that part is clear. That part I have no disillusions about, right? Like that's just an obvious thing. Each one of their spots, whether it's the bullpen, the starting staff, or the offense, if you lose a key figure, I just don't know how they're going to cobble games together. I don't know how they're going to go on a winning streak without that happening. So all your consistent guys, those three in the offense, and then I think with the starting pitching staff, it's pretty much got to be Gausman is normal Gausman, and Berríos is normal Berríos. And then what are you getting out of the other guys? Can you get surplus value from Bowden Francis again? He's kind of like, to me, if I was doing the underrated storylines, and I'll probably talk about him a little bit more on the show later, but he's sort of one of them where he was brilliant last season, but it's like, I don't think most people know exactly what he is, especially since, again, he's not someone with this stuff plus. And then with the bullpen, same thing. The back three guys, Chad Green, Jeff Hoffman, Jimmy Garcia, they got to be studs. And then you've got to find one or two guys that are in that bullpen that give you the surplus value. Same thing with the offense, same thing with the pitching staff. Like, is Scherzer going to be surplus value, or is he going to be like an injured miss? Like, that's the season to me. Get what you just need. Normal, be normal, top guys, and then a couple of other players on the roster, give me a little bit more. All right, let's take a quick break. Again, the Vladdy stuff is just, it's everywhere. So I want to talk to John Morosi about it next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, there's enough smoke on Vlad Jr. that I had to emergency call this guy. It's John Morosi, Only Network. What's up, buddy? How are we doing? Happy opening day.
JD, happy opening day to you and everybody in Canada. This is quite a time for the Toronto Blue Jays indeed.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. There's just like everyone, like every week, someone's like, hey, the Vladdy and the Jays are getting closer. Hey, maybe there's something going to happen here. It's pretty close to first pitch. It's a 3 o'clock game today. What is your read on what is happening with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as it stands today? And the idea that this team is going to make another pitch before they throw the first pitch today.
It really is surreal. They are still trying. That much I know for sure. I think we all know that for sure, that they're still trying and still talking. I find it interesting that, of course, 6 weeks ago, that was supposed to be the deadline, and it clearly wasn't. And so as we sit here today, JD, any notion that everything has to be signed, sealed, delivered, sent to the commissioner's office before first pitch today, or everything goes away, that doesn't make any sense to me, because we're already well past what the deadline was supposed to be. We're also well past the point where there was supposedly a cone of silence around whether or not they were still talking, and clearly, based on public comments and whisperings, that's not the case either. So we are in somewhat of an unprecedented area. And what I do think, and you look at the reporting yesterday, Mike Rodriguez has been pretty accurate about a lot of things that he said concerning this situation. And he seemed to indicate that maybe the final number, if something happened, would be in the neighborhood of 550, something in that range. And I think when you look at the math here, JD, it does pencil out pretty nicely, because 560 would be a $40 million AAV over 14 years. And that is, we know 14 years was a bit of the benchmark when you consider that would be a similar time horizon to the Soto deal. $40 million seemed to be the type of area that Vladdy was looking at. And what I was told, aware of what's going on here in general terms, is that a major issue still is the notion of deferments and how much would be deferred. This is, while the numbers, I'm not saying the numbers are easy to arrive at by any means, but the numbers, the sticker price, if you will, that's math, and that's what the AAV should be over a certain number of years. The really important piece to actually bring it to a conclusion is, how do you handle the deferments? Now, the Dodgers have made deferments very in vogue. They're not the first team to do it, but they've certainly popularized it. And so it's not out of bounds for the Jays to ask for some deferments here, because that's become standard operating procedure for a lot of big-time contracts. But I do believe that to the extent that, and I would never describe the numbers as being easy to arrive at, but I think the deferrals and that piece of things are at least as much of an issue, if not a greater issue now, than the numbers on the contract itself.
So the understanding would be that if the Blue Jays try to do this again, they're still going to try with deferrals.
Yes. I think that the notion, JD, that a contract of this size would have no deferrals, and it would be completely paid in present value. I would be surprised if that were the result. But it's a question of how much is it deferred. I don't think it would be. I guess I should back up and say it's really hard to know exactly where that comfort level is in terms of how much would be deferred. But the notion of a contract of this size that is not done with the benefit of free agency, that it would occur with zero deferrals at all, I would find that to be hard to believe. It's just probably a question of how much. And I think that's where the sticking point could be.
Yeah, I mean, that feels really sticky still then, because everything that we seem to have learned about Vladdy is that he wants that like present day value to be over $500 million. And so it's like, yeah, how you're getting there with meaningful deferrals becomes harder and harder to see. The only thing that like the thing that is the biggest point of curiosity for me right now is that there have been these little leaks, right? And again, you never know exactly how credible some of these things are. And I'm not going to ask you to like comment on them necessarily because, yeah, I know other insiders don't like having a comment on other insiders' work. But a lot of it has been from what I would think is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s camp. Like, it's been a lot of reporters from the Dominican Republic who have put stuff out and been like, hey, they're going to give one more pitch. They're going to give one more offer. And Vladdy has been so vocal at times that I'm like, why would he be saying stuff like this about the Yankees? Like, I get it, but you don't really need to market yourself to New York. They're going to come to you in the offseason if you're available with a contract offer. Like, you don't, like, there's no purpose for it outside of trying to, in my opinion, increase leverage with your team and trying to basically make a threat of, hey, we're going in the division. And my thought on it kind of all along has been, this actually seems to be more of the behavior of someone who wants to be a Toronto Blue Jay, who does not want to go to free agency, because, you know, you say things like, hey, my floor is $500 million, but my ceiling is $700 million. It's like, I don't know. Again, this is reaching a touch, but I'm like, I don't think he's getting $700 million. And I also think he probably knows he's not getting $700 million. And so how much of this, like, in terms of the stuff that's gone public, do you think it's just like Vladdy actually wanting to get this deal done before the season starts? Like, he wants the cost certainty. He's not like Juan Soto, where he just wants to be, hey, everybody throw an offer at me and I know what it's going to be. I know I'm going to break the bank and I want the absolute very, very, very top dollar.
I do believe that he wants to stay. That to me has become clear. My read on it is the same as yours, and not just because of the way that the information has been disseminated, but even the comments of Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins in recent days, whether it was this week from Ross about having hope, or Mark Shapiro's comments about believing that there's alignment and a shared goal. If they felt like there was no chance, then I believe they would have taken a much more reserved approach about saying we're just not going to talk about it. By acknowledging that there's still hope and there's still a belief that they'll get things done. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's what they've put out there. That is uncharacteristic of this front office to even put themselves out there to that extent, given they know that the fan base has been disappointed on numerous occasions with high profile pursuits in the last year and a half. So we know that to be true. And I do think that this is just a unique player for a unique team at a unique time. In terms of the Jays know that they need a high profile win of a negotiation of this scope. And I think they know the peril to their own public profile if they swing and miss again. And I think Vladdy is aware of that. And Vladdy, whether it was calculated, however it came to be, this notion that, you know, was it exactly $50 million or something in that range that they were apart, it did hit the fan base in a particular way, because the fan base said, wait a minute, $50 million over 10-plus years, Are we really going to lose a franchise player of our own over that amount of money when you take it over 10 years, 12 years, 14 years, when we've come so close on other players of a similar profile and fallen short? Shouldn't we just step up and make this deal? And I think that Vlad, who is savvy to the business of the game, he's grown up around it, JD, when you think about it, he probably knew what reaction it would create to sort of put some of those numbers out there. And to some extent, he's been proven right, because supposedly February 18th was supposed to be the end of it, and it clearly has not been. And now here we are hours before the first pitch. We are in a place that certainly did not seem possible when he reported to Dunedin and there wasn't a deal. And I have no doubt that what has changed the game here is those numbers becoming public and the process itself becoming much more public in a very un-Blue Jays kind of a way. And I think there probably have been some lessons learned about how to handle negotiations of this level of public interest in the age of social media and rapid 24/7 news, because I really believe that those numbers getting out there have shifted a bit of the process right now.
Well, they better be good at that, because they've had a lot of – that's the one thing they should be able to say is, hey, we've had a lot of experience in the last couple of years at trying to get these things done. So let's have it actually materialize into an actual signing rather than just, oh, well, they got close or they were the runners-up. Like, everybody's good on that. And, yeah, to your point about how the front office would be if they didn't actually feel optimistic, it's like, no, look no further than the other guy, Bo Bichette, right? What's the noise around Bo? Are they going out there saying they're confident about Bo? Like, no. They're radio silent on Bichette. And so that's why these comments, whether it's been Mark or now, you know, Ross coming out and talking about it, it's hard not to lean a little bit more cautiously optimistic that they will get this thing done. And, you know, I am talking to you today because it is opening day and that it seems like yet another deadline, right? Hey, well, it's still technically before the season. And I've heard a lot of people have the opinion of, well, if it doesn't get done before the season, then he's going to free agency. And I got to tell you now, I'm a little less sure of that actually being the case. And yeah, could the number, I guess, change if they continue to drag it into the season? Like, could it only get more expensive? I guess that's a likely outcome here. But do you anticipate that if this is not done today, that negotiations could still end up going on, you know, a couple of weeks from now?
I would describe it this way, JD. It's a big day, but I cannot imagine that it's the last day. I just can't. Yeah. And even Mark Shapiro's comments about, again, you go back to his big availability where he basically said, "What does it happen in free agency? Does it happen before free agency?" We have seen already the willingness of both parties to resume talks after a supposed deadline. So I cannot believe that post 3 p.m. today, if there's not a press conference, that it all goes away. I don't believe that that's the case. It may, the deeper that you go into the season, it may result in a little diminished chance tomorrow versus today, but I don't think we're going down to zero. And I do think this, that, and this will be interesting to me. I can't swear to what the impact would be, but if you're Bo, if you're other players in the clubhouse, and if he's not signed, and if for the next 6 months, every time you play in New York or every time you play in Boston, yes, there's a reporter coming up and asking what the latest is on everything, it would certainly take a little bit of the attention away from the group, and that's on some level to be expected. But the fact that we're still talking about it now just indicates to me that this story has some pretty big legs for a variety of reasons, and it's not going to go away unless there's a deal signed. And depending on how the team is playing, it could create a rather interesting dynamic in the clubhouse if you're a player there and here comes a group of reporters to talk to Vlad and there's eyes rolling saying, here we go again. And by the way, if the team isn't playing well and if he's not signed, the conversation very quickly will pivot to, okay, team's not playing well. How do you feel about getting traded to Boston this year? How do you feel about getting traded to New York this year? And then there's another round of stories. So there is to me, JD, there is a value to getting it done today if you're the Blue Jays. There's a value beyond just signing the player, because it in a very real way has an impact on the fan base and their attitude. And I also think it has an attitude on the atmosphere and the chemistry around the team. Hard to quantify that. It's difficult for me to say what it is, But I do believe it would shift a bit of the energy and perspective in the clubhouse. Baseball players, by and large, JD, are great compartmentalizers. About, you could have the biggest controversy ever going on about your teammate, but you're not going to be thinking about that when you're in the batter's box. I've seen enough players to know that they're great at compartmentalizing things. But I do believe that on the collective, just sitting on the plane, sitting around, having dinner with your teammates, it would be there if you don't sign up. I think for that reason, there's a lot of urgency to get this thing done.
Yeah, I think that you're bang on, John. Hey, man, I know it's a busy day. I really appreciate you finding time to jump on and share some perspective on this. Happy opening day, John. Thanks for doing it.
Happy opening day. Look forward to catching up during the course of the season, JD. All the best, my friend.
Absolutely. All right. Let's take a quick break. Let's come back and talk to Kevin Pillar. It's one of the best days of the year. It's opening day. And then you get to shut it down with a little bit of Sweet 16. There's a Leafs game tonight, too. It's at 10:30. No Leafs talk tonight, though. Too late. And too after the first baseball game. And too San Jose Sharksy, I would say. I'll probably end up watching it, but, you know, it's a day off. It's baseball. Today's about baseball, all right? It's a baseball day. It's a Blue Jays day. It's the possibly, genuinely, like, this is a real, like, the only day where you could be, like, fully positive about the team. They could get absolutely obliterated this afternoon, and it could just immediately start to spiral. But today, it's going to just be complete renewed optimism, complete memory lane of your favorite home openers. Today is about, if you go to the ballpark and you celebrate it, you go meet up with friends. I'll be down there. Again, reach out anytime at JD Bunkus. Always love ending up running into people who listen down at the stadium. Yeah, this is the best. You get to have, like, as long as it doesn't turn into the home opener, like the first R.A. Dickey start where they couldn't catch him. And it was like, wild pitch. Okay. Bad first impression. I want good first impressions today. I want to see Alan Roden, and I want to see him get like two hits. And people go, yeah, I love the conversation you have with the person that's not as tight with the baseball team that's there. And I do think that this is more of a day for the diehards, but I do love the conversations of you going like, this is the new rookie. Like they got a lot of faith in him. I'd love to have one of those days with Alan Roden. I'd love to have Jeff Hoffman come in and close out the game and see what his new thing is on the Jumbotron, because they no longer had it's lost thing. They put in all those red lights for Jordan Romano. Can't do it for Jeff Hoffman. What's his thing? What's his music going to be? I want to hear Jeff Hoffman's new music, him trotting down there and then hopefully pumping crazy heat, blowing the doors off guys, and then shutting it down for a Blue Jays win. I want to see the new ballpark features. Like, God, it's just a perfect, perfect, perfect day. Cannot wait to get down there. I'll be down there with Ennis. So yeah, reach out anytime at JD Bunkus, both Twitter and Instagram. All right. Had a chance to catch up with Rangers new outfielder, who, by the way, yeah, still playing, still made an opening day roster. Kevin Pillar. Very, very, very pleased to have back on the show. Former Blue Jay, current Rangers outfielder, which I think was a surprise to a lot of people. It's Kevin Pillar. Hey man, it's been 6 years since you played in Toronto. Can you believe it's been that long?
Yes and no. I mean, the memories are still very ingrained in my brain, close to my heart. But, I mean, my baseball journey has been kind of wild since I left Toronto. And in some regards, it does kind of feel like a different life. But definitely a memorable time in my career and in my life, and always be a special place.
Yeah, I hate it because when I see stuff like this, I think, okay, cool. The most formative years of my baseball experiences were, you know, you guys, especially in 2015 and 2016, and all the games and memories that I have of going down to the Rogers Center. And so when people tell me, like, hey, how long it's been since those times, I'm like, please don't just keep this up. That, to me, I'm like, I like it comfortably where that's like 3 or 4 years ago. You know, that's kind of where my mental space is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you for that. I mean, it was kind of similar for me, too. I mean, I was very fortunate, some would say spoiled a little bit in terms of, you know, getting to the playoffs, winning division in my first year. first full season and going to the playoffs the following year, you know, and playing the most exciting baseball of my life and my career, you know, and then it took me, you know, 6, 7, 8 years following that to get back to the playoffs. So, you know, whether you're a fan or a player, you just don't realize how fortunate you are when your team is in the playoffs. And when you feel like you've kind of built this, I don't want to say dynasty, but when you kind of feel like the foundation is there to have a long period of success, it makes it tough when you're not getting to the playoffs every year. And, you know, I know since the team I was on, you know, has been back to the playoffs, but correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they've won a playoff game, you know, since 2016. So it's a tough time for, you know, the players, the organization, and, you know, the fans. So, you know, but the positive side to that is, you know, it's hard to get to the playoffs. You know, they've been knocking on the door, you know, for the last couple of years. It's just a matter of, you know, breaking it down.
So I got a confession for you, and that is when I was, like, thinking about guys that I'd love to have on this week, I was like, okay, you know, thinking about, like, the most memorable Blue Jays players. It's opening week. There's a lot of excitement in the city. It's, like, the time where people are dreaming on things, right? And one of the hallmarks of their team is defense. And I was like, man, who better to speak to than, like, one of the most memorable defensive players that we've ever had. And then I'm, like, looking you up and Googling things and trying to see what's going on with you. And I'm like, oh, my God, I thought this guy said he was going to retire. And he's not retired. He's actually, you know, made the team for the Texas Rangers. So what changed for you?
I mean, I had an off-season thumb surgery. I actually got hurt here in Texas playing here in September. And I remember having the phone call with my trainer from the Angels. You know, I went home in the off season. My thumb still wasn't right. I wasn't able to pick up a glass. I wasn't able to open a door. So I knew something was wrong. Got an MRI. Needed to have my thumb fixed. And at that time, I was a little uncertain. I was pretty positive I was going to retire. I just remember him saying, you know, what if you still want to play? And then I started thinking, okay, what if I just want to play catch with my son? You know, maybe I should get this thumb fixed. And, you know, going through that rehab process, going through the surgery, you know, I finally got cleared after about 9 weeks of rehabbing my thumb. And I said, let's just pick up a bat, see how it feels. You know, started getting the itch a little bit. You know, I was working out because I enjoy working out anyway. You know, I wouldn't say I was doing like my typical, you know, off-season baseball workouts, but I was, you know, staying in shape because that's what I like to do. Yeah, and it kind of just hit me kind of around the winter meeting time. You know, I called my agent. I said, you know what, I think I want to give this a go. You know, so we put my name out there and, you know, I didn't get a lot of traction, and I just kind of continued to stay ready. And, you know, for me, moving to Texas, this was kind of the dream scenario for me. And luckily, you know, kind of late in spring training, I got a phone call, and they you know, basically told me they would, you know, let me come into camp and compete for a job with no guarantees. And, you know, part of me was like, okay, best case scenario, I make the team and I'm living at home. You know, worst case scenario, maybe it's maybe the closure that I needed. Maybe I just need to go out one last time and, you know, kind of just see if I have it or I don't have it. And if I did have it and I didn't make the team, it was going to be a tough decision. Do I, you know, obviously I would go and explore other opportunities, but if not, do I go to AAA and, you know, stay ready and give that a month or two and maybe get called up? But the idea of playing at home, being able to commute and keep my kids in school and, you know, see them, you know, and not have to kind of uproot their life was just kind of the perfect scenario. And, you know, I went into spring training with no expectations. I just kind of went in, and it was really just kind of playing for the joy and the love of the game. Kind of what I found myself doing last year in Anaheim when I got kind of a second chance. And I felt like it brought out the best in me. And, you know, fortunately I had a good spring training, and it just, kind of all the chips kind of, you know, fell into place and everything kind of aligned where, you know, they needed a right-handed hitting outfielder and, you know, they had some guys with options and it was just kind of the perfect scenario for, you know, me to land here.
Yeah, honestly, man, that's a great answer because it's always awesome to hear guys who still, you know, they're doing it for the reasons of, like, love of the game and rekindling a passion because, honestly, from the outside, what it looked like when it's, like, especially thinking that you were calling it quits after the Angels stretch, which was a good one, like, yeah, you're a plus war player again. And the read from the outside is, like, you played for the White Sox and it's so bad there that it made you stop loving baseball and that you wanted to just stop playing.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was the most enjoyable time being there, but I wouldn't say it was quite that bad where it made me hate baseball. But it was more some business decisions, you know, that made me not like baseball or the industry as much. You know, having a conversation with a team in the off season and. And I'm smart enough to know when with a minor league deal, nothing's guaranteed. But you know, when a team calls you and invites you into camp, and you know, tells you, you know, you got a pretty good shot of making the team. We need you to play well. You need to do X, Y, and Z, and you check all those boxes, and they agree to pay you a certain amount. And then you would have made the team, but they tell you we don't want to pay you that. And then you come back for less money, and then they still end up releasing you. You know. A month into the season for really no reason. I wasn't playing great, but I wasn't playing poorly. And it wasn't like they had, you know, a lot of internal options. It was more just kind of a paper transaction, you know, and then getting the opportunity in Anaheim and feeling that sense of being wanted and appreciated for, you know, what I've done on the back of my baseball card, but what I kind of bring for a younger group, you know, just experience and leadership and being able to kind of share the things that I've learned throughout my career with, you know, the younger generation. It just kind of really made me enjoy playing baseball again. It made me kind of find the best version of myself. And very similar to the opportunity here, you know, getting past the fact that it took me so long to land on my feet somewhere, you know, when I walked in day one, being embraced by my teammates, coaching staff, front office, you know, being treated, you know, with respect and, you know, for everything that I've earned in my career. And not to say that I'm a superstar and deserve special treatment, but, you know, someone that's endured 10 years and played 10 plus years has obviously done some things right in their career. And I kind of got that sense when I walked into the clubhouse that there was a mutual respect for what I've been able to do in my career and allowing me to be myself and voice my opinions on certain things and actually encourage to, you know, help the younger guys. It just felt like I was in the right place at the right time and ended up having a pretty good spring training and definitely was rewarded by making the team and just kind of been a dream come true to, you know, kind of for the first time in my life, play in the same city that I'm living in and just kind of, you know, feel like I get to live a normal 9-to-5 and my kids get to just stay in school and, you know, continue to make friends and do normal kid stuff while, you know, kind of reaping the benefits of having a dad in the big leagues. And, you know, obviously they're going to miss school tomorrow for opening day. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, for them, it's just about them just kind of being a normal 5- and 7-year-old.
No, I think that's awesome, man. And like, and it doesn't matter what career you're in. Like, again, you've been in the big leagues for 16 seasons now, or like, what is it? No, sorry, 12 seasons. I think I want to say is this will be 13.
Yeah, 12 seasons. Might have that 16 wrong. Yeah, 12 trainings. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that, like, yeah, that's over 1,200.
I think this will be my 11th opening day start, and maybe 12 opening days. So it's kind of crazy. It's kind of surreal for a guy that, you know, never really accomplished anything, you know, worthy of, you know, individual accomplishment. Someone that's just kind of just kept his head down and continued to work and, you know, continue to try to get better with age and, you know, in many ways, just try to turn back the clock as much as possible and then just kind of be a good, you know, I think it's just a, I think there's a lot of people in this, you know, in this world that, you know, kind of only see, you know, one type of player in the major leagues, and that's kind of the superstar, perennial all-star. And, you know, after my time in Toronto, when I wasn't getting the same opportunities, I said there's nothing wrong with being a great role player and a great guy coming off the bench. And it's provided me a great life and an unbelievable career. And I'm thankful for all the opportunities that I've been given in this game.
Yeah, I think that's awesome perspective, man. And I think it's very cool that you get to be around your family and get them to have like a sense of normalcy, but also for them to actually get like a real look at what you do, you know, like getting to see what your life is like as a big leaguer. Yeah, I think it's awesome that you've embraced your role as a veteran player. And you can't say a couple, you did get down ballot MVP votes one year. You know that, right? 2019. He was like, you actually got him. I'll just say
that wasn't worth it.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just saying that's
a criticism.
Not everybody
I got.
Can say
like,
that.
I voted for myself.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of criticism and scrutiny that came with that, but I didn't vote for myself, so it wasn't mine.
I was
going to
say,
you know?
Who cares who criticizes you? At the end of the day, like that's there, man.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you know,
I don't really care.
Yeah, they pull up the stats and it's like, our dad in the bigs for this many years, again, had this many opening days, stuck around baseball for this long. And like the other cool thing again, too, like with the Toronto connection is like, man, you're just genuinely loved here. Like people still have just these incredibly fond memories of you. I know, again, for like an entire generation of baseball fans, it's like you're the guy, like you're the face of the Toronto Blue Jays defense. Like you were the guy that patrolled the outfield. You're the guy that put his body on the line, who ran into countless walls and hit that hard turf. And it's one of the questions that like I had for you is like, how does your body feel? Cause you mentioned the thumb and I think about it. It's like, man, you're not ancient, right? Like what are you, 35? You're 36? Like you think same age?
36.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you're 36 years old. I'll tell you that like, sometimes I'll get off the Peloton and my groin hurts where I'm like, oh, I should have stretched more by doing that. I didn't like crash into the Rogers Center turf over and over and over again. I remember once you broke what's called your clavicular bone on a diving catch where it was like,
yeah, my collarbone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the bone in your chest that all of a sudden pressed in and can like actually hurt your organs and had to go to the hospital. Like I can't imagine. Yeah. What your shoulder feels like some days, given the way that you'd stretch out for some baseballs, like people can just Google the highlights of how many times you ran into the wall. I figure that whoever puts up like the video screen and has to deal with like the bulbs and the fractures must have hated your guts because you made their job like infinitely more difficult having to go replace those screens. But yeah, like just generally, how do you feel? Because I would imagine that, especially playing here where that turf and like what underneath it is like a layer of concrete, like one, like a, like very, very quickly. Yeah. Sometimes like you got your days.
For sure. I mean, I still have my days, but I think I just learned a lot through those experiences. And as I got older, I just, you know, being a professional athlete at this point is just a full-time job. You know, you get home in the off season and yes, you do take a little breather and stuff, but taking care of your body is a full-time job now. And I've just learned from a lot of the guys that I played with on, you know, how to do that. And, you know, it became easier as I got a little bit older. You know, obviously financially you're in a different place and you just learn to invest in yourself. You know, you see what guys like LeBron, you know, rumored to spend millions of dollars on his body every year. You know, it sounds crazy to most people sitting at home, but that's probably the reason he's been able to play as long as he has. And obviously financially that's not a huge investment compared to what he's making, but you just kind of learn from the great guys that have longevity in their career, and it's, you know, learning to invest in yourself.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you embracing your role as a veteran now, and I am curious again, because like you spent your early years in Toronto and they were so good and so great and so fast. If there was anybody in particular that, you know, really helped shape the way that you feel like you try to impress yourself or some of the lessons that you try to teach to younger players.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of great teammates and a lot of great leaders that I still talk to today. Just so many guys taught me how to be
you know, accountable and a professional. And then, you know, obviously a lot of X and O's, you know, once we were teammates and when we shared a clubhouse in terms of, you know, how to game plan off pitchers and, you know, like I even mentioned, how to take care of your body in the off season. And, you know, I still talk to a lot of those guys today. You know, you know, now that I've been in so many different clubhouses and I've had so many different teammates, you know, what we had there was super rare and super, just super cool. I mean, like I said, I've been in a lot of clubhouses. There's not a lot of teams I've been on where the guys were so close and genuinely, you know, each other's biggest fans, and you could see lifelong relationships being formed. You know, Atlanta, me being in Atlanta that year was probably the closest thing that I had seen to the closeness in a clubhouse is what we had in Toronto. And, you know, talking to some of these guys that I have here as teammates, you know, some of those Oakland A teams, and I have some friends that run those teams, very similar too, where, you know, guys are just lifelong friends. So, you know, equally as important to, you know, a lot of the success we had on the field is, you know, just understanding how lucky I am to have made lifelong friends in the game.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite opening day memory?
Probably my first one. There's nothing like your first one. I was in New York, and, you know, my family and my wife's family and my wife was there, and I faced Tanaka in Yankee Stadium, and I got a hit in my first opening day at bat, and it's always going to be memorable. I'm also pretty sure it was Devin Travis's first opening day, and I think pretty sure he hit a home run too that day. And, you know, speaking of, you know, lifelong friends, that's one of my boys that, you know, I still stay in touch with, talk to all the time, you know, spend some time with him the off season. So, you know, being able to be there for, you know, his first opening day and, you know, witnessing his success was awesome.
Yeah, that is very cool. I'll wrap this up in a second, but I do have to ask you this question, which is lately there has been like a ton of media podcast or like former player podcasts, especially in the NBA, where there's been like, I would say at this point, four former Toronto Raptors talking about how difficult it was for American born players to play in Toronto specifically. And they've acknowledged like, hey, the nightlife was great and that there's a lot of good things about the city, but that the customs thing just like really wore on them, and culturally that it was just like very, very difficult. And I am curious, like, honestly, yeah, sort of what you don't really hear that from too many baseball players. That hasn't really become too much of a through line when you do hear about guys and their desire to be in Toronto. And I am curious, like, now that you've played in all these other places and that you have had a very long career, if you do look back on that any differently, or if you do feel any differently about playing in the city.
No, I never really understood when people complain about that. Yes, there is a little additional a challenge, you know, coming and returning, you know, in terms of the way that we are accustomed to traveling, being able to, you know, kind of not go into the airport and be able to, you know, just hop on a plane like you do in most other cities. So there is a little bit of a challenge or difficulty in it, but I never saw that as enough to not want me or my family to be able to play there. And yeah, there's an additional challenge, you know, for your families to travel and have to clear customs and stuff like that. And, you know, I could see how some people could see that's an issue, but I felt like the trade-off for being in that city and, you know, there's not a lot of places, in my opinion, where, you know, you're genuinely, you know, a big deal, like movie star status in a city. You know, there's just so much going on in a lot of big cities now. And, you know, there's a lot of things to compete with, but I felt like as an athlete in Toronto, you kind of, you know, were the top of the totem pole in terms of popularity and the ability to just, you know, have access to anything that you wanted to have access to. And you know, I thought that was well worth the price of, you know, occasionally having a little bit more difficulty traveling.
Hey, man, you've been super generous with the time. I wish you all the best with this season. And I got to say, like, again, when I was looking back on some of those highlight reel catches and just kind of going through some of your career here, I got to tell you, it's pretty incredible how often you made a catch where you were either diving into a wall or trying to scale it or, you know, were laying your body out and you'd look at the score and it just like didn't matter. And I think that's just like an incredibly admirable thing that, yeah, you put your body into those positions regardless of what was, yeah, on the scoreboard or what the game situation was. And I think that, yeah, when you talk about like that love and admiration that a city has for you, like I think that you're always going to have it here. And we very much appreciate the time, dude.
Well, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
Yep. Yeah, man. Take care. Have a great season. Kevin Pillar, former Blue Jay and now outfielder for the Texas Rangers. Great chat. So that's a lot more in line with what you would expect from a professional athlete getting paid millions of dollars to live out a dream. No? Because if you haven't been following along with this former Raptor story, it has gotten pretty outsized on social media. Like it's big on Twitter. So maybe it hasn't reached you in terms of your traditional outlets. I don't think that we would be writing articles, say, like on Sportsnet.ca, or that it's coming up on other shows necessarily. I've commented on it a little bit before when it was, God, who was the first to do it? Armin, who was it? Because Rudy Gay jumped in and he went the hardest. He's making fun of the accent. Lou Williams has talked about it and been like, yeah, it's really tough. Charlie Villanueva tried to basically be like, yeah, I enjoyed it. But then he was sort of kind of gave in to the peer pressure around him about playing in Toronto and how difficult the customs were and having to travel. This all started because of, Thad Young was the first guy to do it. And then it's just been this parade. And like, this has happened before, right? It was really disappointing when Chris Bosch did it. And I think that's the part that really sucks for you as a fan is it's not that those aren't realistic things, right? And it's not that you don't want to hear people's perspectives where they're like, hey, playing in the city of Toronto was phenomenal. Customs are a little annoying, but it's sort of like that where you're like, yeah, I guess that's like a little bit of something. Again, it's the lack of perspective for that many people to love you, to adore you. Like Thad Young was a absolute nothing player here. His most famous moment was getting into an argument with Scotty Barnes, for God's sakes. And the team paid him handsomely, like paid him real money, millions of dollars to essentially sit on the bench and live in Toronto and get to try what it was like living in a different country. And instead of him talking about like, hey, it was a cool experience for my son, he's like, oh, my son hated it. It's like, okay, cool. Like, you didn't show him anything that the city has to offer, like one of the biggest cities in North America. That was your takeaway. Like, remember when Luis Scola came here and his perspective where he was like, yeah, I'm so thrilled. I get to show my kids a brand new country. I get to show them a whole bunch of different communities. We love being able to move around. It's like, yeah, but yeah, for like Lou Williams and he's like, oh, I enjoyed my time in Toronto, but it's like, okay, man, again, the most famous artist on the planet at the time wrote a song about you. Fans were cheering your name like crazy. People were buying your jersey like crazy. And that's still something that was top of mind for you. Like Rudy Gay, say what you will about how fans booed you when you left. Like that's just kind of being sports fans and whatever. It was kind of funny to dig at the accent, but ultimately it was like, yeah, I was there for your first game here, Rudy. I remember how the fans welcomed you in and how they cheered you on. And honestly, I think Raptors fans can be like an incredible pain in the ass. But man, there's no more loyal fan base to their players. There's no more fan base that like gets up and just like as welcoming as Toronto Raptors fans. Like for real, like you go to these games, look at these games right now. It's a tire fire. They're just beating up on bad teams with scraped together lineups. And they're still basically packing the place and getting loud and celebrating this team full of like, yeah, basically G Leaguers fighting for 10 days and the Raptors fans still get up for them. And Blue Jays, similar, very, very similar stuff. And you heard it from Kevin there where it's like that crowd goes crazy. And have the last few seasons been lean in terms of success, especially in the postseason? Yeah, for sure. But you could put the Rogers Center just up against any stadium when it's rocking. You really can. And even when it isn't, I feel like so much momentum carried over from 2015-16 to what you see down in that building right now, and the appreciation fans have for their players and the way that they root them on and the way that they, yeah, just show up and support the club. And so for me, it was refreshing to hear Kevin talk about Toronto in that way, where you're like, yeah, sure, customs, big deal. I got to play in front of a city that loved me, a city where I had access to everything at I could have ever wanted at my disposal as a millionaire. And yeah, when I got on an airplane, on a jet to go play another team as I lived out my dream, yeah, they made me check my, they made me go through a detector, and they asked me how long my stay was going to be. Whew. Boy, oh boy. Sometimes you just really got to feel for those athletes. That's where it's like, when we, again, it's stupid, but it's like we do the like, oh, don't forget their people. It's like, yeah. Sometimes I think that they forget their people. Like, you just got to go through customs. That's your big thing. That was your big takeaway from living in a different city in a different country and getting paid millions and being celebrated by millions of people. That was your overarching takeaway, that when you retired and you moved on, you felt like you needed to air on podcasts, like you needed to like make that basically the thing that you are remembered for here. And again, like you do that, and that is the way you will be remembered here. And not like those guys had incredible Toronto Raptors legacies. I think Lou Williams kind of did. But yeah, you even just think about Bosch, and I know Bosch left on unceremonious, like he left on bad terms, but ultimately, yeah, I don't think the relationship will ever be the same for a lot of people, which is weird because it's like Vince Carter actually quit on this team and he got celebrated in a way that I never expected him to, but he never complained about customs. And so, yeah, you can repair that relationship. You can't repair the complaining about the customs relationship. Anyways, I want to just mention some breaking news here. Well, breaking-ish news. I don't know. Yeah, it's breaking news. Buster Olney of ESPN has just tweeted, the Blue Jays have made another offer in their negotiations with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Per sources, a gap still remains between the two sides. Bummer. Again, you can carry some level of optimism, which is what we talked to Morosi about, that the negotiations, I guess, can continue into the season. But that sucks, man. Like, again, Blue Jays, you know what the number is. And I guess they're going to have to leak it. They're going to have to just get it out there, whatever it is that they've offered him, if it is the actual $500 million, if they did cross that gap. But like you heard Morosi say it, is these guys, if they're still doing the deferred money, I don't think he's interested in the deferred money. Like, not everybody's going to do that. And the reality of it is like, okay, you really think that every organization, like that's the only way that they're going to be able to get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. done? So unless there's, this is the way that I'll put it. Unless there is a leak that says the Blue Jays actually met Vladdy's demands in terms of what he said it was, the $500 million, and they bridged that gap of, what was it? Like, I can't even remember, like $5, $6 million a season. All these shows have run into one another after doing all these Vladdy talks. But I think that there was an actual additional value to getting this thing done today. For a team that has cared, let's put it this way. When they wanted to sign Shohei Ohtani, part of the reasoning was there was a business and a marketing decision behind it, right? That if you got Shohei Ohtani, it wasn't even just the Japanese markets. It was that, hey, in Toronto and in Canada, you were able to sell this guy across the country and say like, hey, here's the face of this team. And he's just so marketable and you can have the best player in baseball. Vladdy is one of the best players in baseball and he is extremely marketable. Everybody knows him. And the idea that you could have gotten this positive PR pop of, hey, we actually inked this guy. Hey, we got it done. Hey, we know we fell short with Soto. We know we fell short with Shohei Ohtani. We know that we've been in on top-tier free agents and we haven't really been able to get that done. And yeah, whatever, to the crowd that's like, well, what about Gossman and Springer? And it's like, it's a different echelon. There's levels to this game. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in that upper tier, upper echelon level, and he's your own guy. And you want to be able to get this done. And when you're trying to represent the, hey, the Blue Jays that spend money now, hey, the Blue Jays that are going to be perennial, at least contenders for the playoffs, not contenders for championships, is really getting harder and harder and harder and harder and harder to do, right? This is just disappointing. It's disappointing that they still couldn't be able to come to a deal, because the pop and the enthusiasm that that would have given the fan base going into the season to know that they weren't going to have to deal with things like this. And let's be honest, like, there's a reason why we're talking about the way that former Raptors players feel about us. There's a reason why we're asking Kevin Pillar about how he feels about us. It's because there's like an insecurity to being the only Canadian team. And I don't think there's really anything wrong with that. If you live here, you know the positive sides of the city. You know what it can be when it's at its very best. You probably live here for a reason. You might have moved here. The city's great. I love Toronto. I don't think I'll ever leave Toronto. It's not for everybody, but it's for a lot of people. Hence the reasoning of, like, yeah, what, 40% of Canada's population all living, like, in Southern Ontario. To have Vladdy get done and to avoid the press of, hey, Yankees fans want him. Hey, Red Sox fans want him. Hey, wouldn't it be great to be living in America? The comments that are going to come from former big leaguers and people that are trying to sell the idea of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in their market, whether it's the Mets, the Yankees, the Red Sox, you know, go on down the line, the Dodgers, whatever. The stories that are going to be on MLB Network and Foul Territory and the conversations that are going to happen, there was a real value in trying to knock away that noise, to me anyway. So I am a little surprised. I am a little surprised that that didn't carry more weight to these guys in terms of if they were offering deferred values again, and that they couldn't come to Vladdy's number and just say, hey, we're not meeting in the middle on this. We're coming up to you, and we're meeting that $500 million real-time, real-money value. And you said that that's what you wanted. We think that you want to be here. I think Vladdy wants to be here. I don't believe that this is all some smokescreen. To me, it's like, yeah, meet his number. Is it high? Yes. Is there, I would say, a very slight chance that he doesn't get this in free agency with a down season? Sure. But ultimately, there's going to be enough suitors, and there's going to be enough big money suitors, and Vladdy carries the kind of name and he carries the age that teams are going to be willing to want to pay for him. So, God, I wish that they were able to get this done and really turn this opening day into something that it will be far more memorable. This would have become the most memorable opening day in the history of the franchise outside of the first one that they had if they would have been able to get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. done, and people would have been chanting his name down at the Rogers Center, myself included, today when I go down there at 3 o'clock. Anyways, bummer that it doesn't look like it's getting done. Again, according to Buster Olney, maybe things change, but yeah, I don't think that a seasoned reporter like that is putting that out there if he doesn't have some pretty damn good information on it. Yeah, they tried. Okay, so they tried, but that's not how this group is measured anymore, especially when it comes to major free agents, and especially with this guy. The trying isn't good enough. The getting it done is. All right, follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at JD Bunkus. Reach out anytime, especially if you're going down to the ballpark today. Quick break and hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Happy opening day. Happy home opener. The day where you can believe. The day where you can hope. So, before I close out today, I think I'm known as a man who likes to place a little wager. As you know, always bet the home team. You go into the game today, just bet the Blue Jays. They're a plus number at most books. And I actually think that there's decent value there. Like, I just like, they're facing Eflin. I think it's a good matchup for this team. I think that the Orioles, dealing with some of the injuries that they are, it's not the complete Baltimore team. And also, I don't think that you should ever really let the past dictate your betting futures in terms of, yeah, just because they've done like one trend, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm usually pretty suspicious of stuff like that. Like, I don't look at it with the same weight that I think a lot of people do. But to me, there is something about playing in front of this crowd on this day that does matter. And if you just look at the last three home openers the Blue Jays have won, and their last five season openers the Blue Jays have won, yeah, just Vladimir Guerrero Jr. contract year. I really like him to, by the way, go over his season total. That's something that I did bet actually last night. His home run prop for this season sits at 30.5. 30.5 home runs. Okay, so I think last year he hit 30. The year before that, he went under. And the year before that, he went over it by a few bombs. But to me, contract year Vladdy knows that what is going to get him paid is the long ball. And given some of the slumps that we've seen him have over the last couple of seasons, for him to be just like right around that number, I'm shading to the over. They need the power from Vladdy. Maybe this is like bet with a little bit of optimism, but entering this season where he is now in his like prime, I gotta think that the only pathway for the Blue Jays to have success is if he's hitting more than 30 bombs. I shouldn't say the only pathway, but again, it kind of leans into what I was talking about earlier, where it's like, hey, they need to have production from their top three guys. And if they're not getting that, it puts so much more pressure on a group of position players that, frankly, I don't think are going to produce stars offensively. You're hoping for guys to be a star each month. You're hoping for guys to be a little bit above what they're expected to, or in the cases of Roden and Wagner, what the projection models actually say they could be, because they're super high on those two dudes. But I like the Blue Jays today, again, at a plus number. That is great. You can buy the Blue Jays home opener, this matchup, Barrios, their track record, home opener plus money. I'm grabbing that today. I sneaky like the first five under in this one. It's 4.5 at plus money. And that to me is a little enticing too. Like, I could just see being able to navigate these lineups a little easier with these starters. I usually do, by the way, lean towards a little bit of betting of looking for the aces early on, especially the guys that had good springs and are like the real aces, being able to pitch well and outmaneuver offenses at this time of year. It's still cold. Guys are still are going to be rusty at the plate. I'm more of like a starting to bet the overs guy as you get a little later into the season, as you start to get like a month in. But today, yes, Blue Jays plus 105. I've seen some places it's all the way down to like minus 105. Try to shop that around. Try to find a good number for them. I like the first five under, 4.5, minus 114 is the best price that I saw for that. Blue Jays and Orioles today. Again, I just think that Jays could put up some runs, and I do think that they're going to. But yeah, when you get through those first three guys, you're going to have an opportunity there early on to, yeah, keep the run total low. So that's where I'm at with this. And then when it comes to the season total, I've seen this pretty much everywhere. There's been a couple of different numbers, but I think where it has settled is the Blue Jays at over under 79.5 wins. And this is the way that I would put it. I think this is going over, because to me, I don't have a strong belief that the Blue Jays are going to sell, because if they're even around it, if they're even close to a wild card spot, I think that they're pushing for it. I know they understand having Vladdy, having Bo in these spots, the age of their roster, the uncertainty that they have moving forward. There is the real possibility that, hey, they lose this season, they don't perform well this season, or they don't make a playoff run, and Vladdy, Bo leave, and Gossman's a year older, Bassett's out, Scherzer's out. They've got a lot of work to do with the pitching staff, with the offense, even with the bullpen. It's just, there's too many things for me to really believe that if that ends up being the scenario, that it's going to be an easy lift for the following year for them to make it. And so given that they didn't even really shop these guys before the season started, given how staunch they've been in their position, that they are not, that they were like trying to be competitive this year, I think it's more likely than not that with this division, the Jays are somewhere around it. And if they're around it, I think that they're going to finish with more than 79.5 wins. To me, part of the pricing in that number is the potential for a sell-off. And I think that's more unlikely than it is likely this year. Yeah, could there be some injuries? Could there be some like really disappointing seasons? Could they be worse than we expect? Yeah. But yeah, for me, you can buy that at minus 120 for the over 79.5 wins for the Toronto Blue Jays this season. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. Those are my bets. Those are the wagers that I'm placing. A couple for today, a couple for the future. Always love a good future bet. Plus, it's just like, yeah, it makes every win matter just a little bit more. Makes every home run matter just a little bit more. Anyways, if you're going down to the ballpark tonight, or today, I guess, 3:00, my recommendation is that you do go a little early. It can be a little bit of a mess when you're trying to get in the stadium on super hot days like this, especially if you do want to see, like, you want to see them pull the flag out, okay? Like, especially if you've never been to one before, there is a really special feeling when you're in there, and especially right now, given the geopolitical climate and our relationship with the United States, all of the tariff stuff, I think that it's going to be a pretty cool patriotic moment when they pull the flag out and they sing "O Canada." So I if you want to be able to see that, which I highly recommend you will want to, I'd get there a little bit earlier than the normal expectation is, because getting in sometimes isn't just always super simple, especially since most people seem to gravitate towards basically two gates at that stadium. But yeah, I'm optimistic. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll feel completely different after tomorrow. Or after tonight and come on the show tomorrow and go like, yep, season's dead. I reserve that ability to have that opinion, because I just, like I said, I think that you can always read a lot into the first game of a season, and it's fun to. It's fun to read a lot into the first game of the season. I'm excited to see Barrios pitch. I'm really excited to see the new bullpen. I really hope Jeff Hoffman ends up coming out today and delivering a save for this team. And I'm very, very curious to see what the reception is like for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he's brought in, and whether there's chance for him, or what it would look like if he was hit a home run, what it would look like if he was to hit a home run today. So yeah, enjoy this time of year, enjoy this game, enjoy the optimism, enjoy those expensive beers down at the ballpark. Let's go Canada. Let's go Blue Jays.